Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the Men and Moon podcast, where you can listen to my voice without seeing my face. It's very exciting. So with this podcast aspect of the Men and Moon community, I'm going to interview different creatives, artists, spiritual seekers, activists, forward thinkers of our time as I continue on my journey of exploring this weird, magical being, a living human being on this earth thing that is happening. So these interviews will be on the YouTube channel as well, but they're longer than most of my videos, so I wanted to give you an option to listen while you drive or make food or sit on the toilet or whatever human activities you might be doing in your day. My first guest is my dear friend Michael Gunger, who I call Vish, short for Vishnu Das, which was a name that was given to him by the spiritual teacher Ram Das. Michael is an incredibly talented musician, along with his stunning wife Lisa. They had a band together called Gunger, and they were what you might call Christian celebrities for a time. And as their spiritual paths shifted and evolved, Michael started other projects like a podcast that he co-hosts called The Liturgists, and he just came out with a book called This, which tells the story of his spiritual journey and what he came to know about this life, this world. And we talked about the book and some crazy thoughts and ideas about what is happening in this. So here we go. Enjoy. All right. So this is probably more comfortable of your world.
Yeah.
You used it. Just funny because for me, it's like less comfortable. I'm getting used to the podcasting.
Because the microphones are...
I don't know. It's just... I think it's just because I haven't done it as much and it is new to me.
Rather than video, you're saying?
Yeah. More than video. Like a camera and I feel like, oh. And
yeah.
Even though we are recording this, but... I don't know. It's different.
It's different. And if I looked like you, I'd be more comfortable.
It's funny because I feel like I've seen myself on camera a lot playing other people, but since I've been doing this and I've been talking about things that are personal or that I care about and being myself on camera, it's been weird. It's actually helped me disassociate, not in a bad way, but not identify with myself as much because I'm watching this character on camera all the time. That's Emily. And watching myself and editing my own face all the time has actually helped me see that character more, I guess.
Interesting.
Which has been really fascinating. But so anyways, here we are back with Vishnu Das, Michael Gunger. We're going to talk about his new book, This, and... it's amazing. It's one of I feel biased because I have my own story and personal connection to it and the timing of it, but it's been one of my favorite things I've read in a long time. So
Thank you, Emily.
Excited to talk about it. I was telling you the other day that it's been an interesting journey for me because the first time I read it was a draft that you had like a year ago that you sent me. And I read it in the car on a road trip to this spiritual retreat where I was really looking to find something. Yeah. And it totally threw off that for me, like going up and reading that. And it resonated so deeply to things I had experienced. And then I was going to find something on this retreat. And then a year later, I listened to the audiobook of the final version on the way back from the same retreat a year later, and it kind of bookended this journey for me and just was helpful. So yeah, it's an amazing read. Can you tell us a little bit about what the book is to start for people?
Yeah, and it should be a simple question.
Yeah.
It's like you're supposed to have your elevator pitch for your book and your, you know, sentence or two. And I've come up with some, but it really is just about this. That's the name of it, and that's what it's about. And that's because that's a ridiculous thing to write about. It's hard to say what the book is about because it's about how we want this to be other than it is. And then all the complicated ways that plays itself out, starting with who we believe that we are and our very sense of self, our very identities, and how our experience of the world filters through all the things that we build up in that, in our identity. So for me, all of that had to do a lot with my religion that I grew up in my beliefs and my shame that had been handed to me from that whole world. And so my experience of this, of reality, of this moment, was always being filtered through all of these stories. And so I wanted to tell this book, I wanted to tell the story of this book with my story hand in hand, because in a way I'm trying to talk about what can't be talked about. So it needs to find some kind of ground somewhere. So I wanted to ground it in my own story, in my own experience, and show how my experience of the unexpressible infinite now was always being filtered through all these stories that caused me a lot of suffering, and kind of told my journey of how those stories evolved through the years and how my experience of this changed as those stories evolved, as my grip continued to loosen on the stories that I found my identity within. And so all of that, it's all in there. There's story and parable and philosophy and all kinds of stuff, all to the end in my hopes of basically, it's kind of written in a very personal way. It's kind of like a lot of it's in second person. And sometimes I call the second person beloved. Sometimes I'll be a little more casual reader or whatever, but it's basically to talk to the true you, which is the true me, the true self, the true isness, the true, all that gives rise to all of us. And so I'm kind of that namaste thing, like speaking to the divine in you and in me, and to remind us who we are and to call us back to the wonder and magic of this moment.
Okay. That's a great explanation.
Thank you.
I was like, how am I going to summarize this book? I'll just let you do it. I'm sure you've had to do it before.
Thank you.
But so people who will pick up your book and read it will get a great idea of your story and kind of who you are. But for those listening right now who don't know you, how would you tell the brief synopsis fairy tale version of the story of Michael Gunger, just to give us a taste of your story up to this point?
Yeah. So I grew up a pastor's kid in central Wisconsin in this tiny little town. We were in this weird church on the edge of town. And my dad was Puerto Rican in this tiny white, like, Lutheran town. We were the charismatic, weird people on the edge of town. This Afro'd Puerto Rican dude with this like crazy church. And I started playing music there. So I learned how to play music in church, these like revival services and long hours of improvising with the band, and went to college for music and ended up working for a church while I was going through college, as their music leader. And through all of that, began to write some original music and record it and started getting gigs and, started touring. And that was a really successful endeavor. Like, all of a sudden we're Grammy nominated Christian musicians. And during all of that, my worldview was kind of falling apart, because there's a whole bunch of reasons why that was. But at the end of the day, I couldn't hold on to my faith anymore that I had been handed, even though I was incentivized with every single realm of my life to do it. So it was a really slow, hard deconstruction of all that, because my claws were really deep in it. Because it was my social world, it was my financial world, my marriage, my deepest relationships were all in that world and dependent on that world. For me to not believe in God was like the worst thing. I might as well be a rapist or something. Like, it was the worst to be an atheist. That means you're out. You're hard out. So I fought that so hard, but I eventually... I'm so sorry. No. Is that... Oh, that was my antibiotics alarm.
It's important. You need those.
Yes, I'm a guy. I would forget about antibiotics. Yeah. I probably will now.
I'll remind you when we're done. Thank you.
Yeah, so losing my faith, but then having and then experiencing some of the fallout of that in my life and everything at the same time as us having a special needs daughter and moving because there was drama with where we were at in our world and our world was falling apart. And the world battered me to a point where I just couldn't keep trying to hold it together. And kind of just, it reminds me of those that words of Jesus were talked about, unless a grain of wheat unless it falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. And I was this single, this like separate guy trying to make the world, trying to make the world into a world that I could be happy in and love and craft a God that I could believe in and love. And I just kind of couldn't do it anymore. And there was like a sort of death. Mm-hmm. And in that, I discovered life, capital L, self, capital S, God, which was just this. And it wasn't an achievement. It wasn't something that the ego did or could take credit for. It was more that I saw through the illusion of the Michael Gunger story of all the things that I thought there was the I that was trying to make the world a certain way. And I kind of saw the mechanism that was doing that. Mm-hmm. And it couldn't actually be truly said to be me. And that sounds esoteric if you haven't seen that.
Yeah.
But I try to tell it in the way in the book that leads step by step to hopefully people will be able to see something about what I mean when I say that.
I think that's a big important part of it, because I've seen a lot of other people and have gone through myself what it looks like when you try to own that as an ego, as an experience you had, or this is me that is this. And it doesn't work, because I think that's why I've had so many of those experiences where I saw that, but then somehow convinced myself that I made it up or something, because my self couldn't make sense of that memory as if it was something that I experienced. Mm. So then I ended up dismissing it. Or you see a lot of people that are, you know, as there's different people would call it different things. Ram Dass would say an enlightened ego, or I've heard some people say mystical pride, where you think that you are me, Emily Capshaw, is God, and not you though, but me, because I had this experience. And so I think it's important to acknowledge that we do see that firsthand, that it's something outside of ourselves, seems to be an important piece. So,
yeah, there's nothing that the ego would love more than to get the gold star of enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And because that's like super high up on the ladder. I see how it truly is, and I really am the special one. Yeah. And that's what the ego's up to.
It's like my favorite page in Be Here Now is the one where he talks about Sam Jones. You know what I'm talking about? Have you seen that? Where he says this drawing of this hippie man, Sam Jones, and he talks about that experience when you go in with your ego on, still on, go through the door with your ego still on.
Oh, gotcha.
And he goes, there's Sam Jones next to Jesus and God and Gabriel and then Sam Jones.
Yeah.
It's so funny to me, because and he says that's how you end up in a mental institutions, because you think, you know, people are like, you're not God. People don't like it when you say you're God.
Yeah.
Especially
if you're an ego saying it separately, it is pretty messed up.
Yeah. It doesn't make people feel happy and comfortable in their constructs. So cool. So what would you say is the person who should read this book? Who is this book for?
Um, I mean, the book is for whoever will read it, because that is what's gonna, if when that happens, that's the perfect thing, because that's what happened. What else could there be? But I think the kind of person that's going to tend to be helped by this book are probably seekers, probably people that have been seeking some sort of liberation, have been seeking some sort of salvation, probably have had some sort of like transition of all that, as far as maybe the stories you were handed as a kid don't fit as well anymore, or maybe you've gone through lots of iterations of all those stories and you've been looking. There's been a significant amount of movement in your life. It's not really for people, I don't think. I wasn't writing it in a way that I would think would be extremely helpful to somebody who hasn't done a lot of, like if there's no self-empowerment, there's a level, there's a place in life where like you feel disempowered and you need to actually be in a time of ego, like strengthening. Mm-hmm. Some people need to be in a time of like, I am Michael Gunger and I can do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to exert my will and my strength, and I'm not just going to take this lying down. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be the man that I know I can be. And that's a healthy part of development. It really is. A lot of us get arrested at that stage. We've lived in environments where we never got to do that fully. And if that's where you're at, this probably is not the book for you. Mm-hmm. 'Cause maybe you'll find something in there interesting. And I hope that the book does not negate that part of a journey or anything like that. 'Cause I do see that as a beautiful and important stage of being a human being. But it comes to a point where the, I am Michael Gunger and I can do it, runs out of gas. Mm-hmm. And it's not quite the same as pre-ego development. It's a post, like, okay, I've really given this my best shot. I've really given the world all that I have and it's not working. That's more probably the place that it would meet people at. Mm-hmm. To be a hopeful book rather than quashing you before you've even given it a try.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an important thing to think about, because in an effort to look at life as this journey, you know, we hear all the time, it's about the journey and not a destination. But I think a lot of times we don't really understand what that means or what that looks like. And we want to arrive to the destination of seeing life as a journey and not a destination, as if that's something we just need.
That's really
funny. It's like all those little tricks of I've found in myself all the time where I'm like, so now I have arrived that I see that there is no arriving. I've arrived at not arriving. Good for me. Good for <You know?
laughs> That's great.
But it is important to go through all of our own process and not try to get somewhere too quick. Because for me, I read the words of, I don't know what I guess I would call truth or the reality of what this is so many times and did not understand it because I had not had the experiences necessary to understand it. And as somebody who is a writer as well, there's been so many times where I've experienced something and thought, how can I write this and give it to everybody? But you can't. Words can't do it. You have to have the experience to make sense of that. And when you have, the words can be very helpful to make sense of that or kind of clarify it or crystallize it, I've found, but only after you've experienced it.
Yeah.
So I went through this whole thing of, why even write? Because it's not helpful. Mm. But then I think about all the times that I've experienced something that's so beyond anything I've ever felt. And then somebody's words will kind of slip into my head and I'm like, that was what they were writing about. And or afterwards I'll find something just happens to fall into my life in perfect synchronicity, and then it makes sense to what I had experienced. So there's that kind of dance between words, the role of words, and the role of experience and how they can aid each other, but one can't really go without the other, I found. But
Yeah, that's good. One thing I feel like I've learned over the last few years is how when we look at what we are making, what we're creating, I do a lot of creating things in the world, the podcast and the music and whatever, the book, whatever else. And it's really easy to tell yourself a story about why you're doing it that is one step removed from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly those things exist, that I do have a desire to help people. I do have a desire to see people free and in wonder of their lives and at home in their lives. But if I only think that's why I'm writing, and I ignore my own desires and my own ego and all that, that's right here in the right at the place that it's being created from, it's easy to become self-delusional.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more longer I've been doing this, the more I pay attention to that first step of like, I'm really writing this for me. I found that why does anything do the butterflies that were migrating from Pasadena up the coast, why were they doing it?
Mm-hmm.
There's not really a why. It's just, they're just doing it. And there's this genius to all of this and it's just happening. But in the experience of that, any individual butterfly, it's probably like, they're not, obviously not in these thoughts, but there goes my friend. I'm mm-hmm. going too. I yeah. want to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want it. There's just like this. Yeah. Okay. I'll be with you. And we're all doing this. And so why I create is coming from this very, like, that's what this organism does. Just like an orange tree grows oranges.
Mm-hmm.
Podcasts grow on this thing.
Yeah.
And books grow off of this thing.
Exactly.
But I've tried to be more honest and direct, that all my aims aren't, when we turn them into these like grand stories of I'm going to change the world, I'm going to change people's lives. I actually think it strangely makes us less effective at doing that,
mm-hmm.
because we're not really in touch with the source of where it's coming from.
Yeah. That's so, because we're really taught culturally to do it. You can't do it for yourself.
Yeah.
That's selfish. You have to have, you know, everybody says, what's your why? That's something I always hear. What's your why? And you're supposed to respond with this. My why is to save all the babies in Africa, you know, like
to
some really
climate change
noble
into, yeah.
why. And somehow that's going to magically make everything
fix
happen,
the world,
you know? And I've had a lot of hard times, especially coming from the church world, trying to align the things that make me happy with some greater purpose of like, why, what is acting to help? Well, I bet I could come up with something to tell people, you know, trying to fit that into that box. And so it's so freeing to just create because you want to, and create what you want because you want to. And it allows you to just be satisfied by the fact that you made it and not have this expectation that then somebody needs to be moved by it, or however number of people need to
totally
acknowledge it. It's like, I did that. I feel satisfied. What am I going to make next? You know? And knowing that everything has already been made, we've made it all already.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And there, when you even look at the big stories that you're telling, I want to help babies, whatever you said. Why?
Mm-hmm.
If you keep asking the why question, okay, that's a great why. Why do you want to help babies?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because I love babies and it makes me feel good to see a baby happy. And why do you like feeling good?
Yeah.
You know, like, it still just comes back to you at the end,
mm-hmm.
and your own desires,
mm-hmm.
and your ego is going to be a part of that mix.
Yeah.
And so the closer that you pay attention to that, then you can at least be like, I've got all these conflicting desires. I've got desires of fear in my ego.
Mm-hmm.
There's anger to be found. There's whatever to be found. But there's also some love to be found. There's also some empathy and compassion to be found. And those are still part of the ego. And they're mm-hmm. still part of this organism and the mechanisms that it has to try to be alive and be okay for itself. But I prefer the things like empathy. Yeah. I like acting out of the empathy, that thrill that I get. Not just the thrill, the sense of connection and warmth and belonging and love that I feel when I'm acting in empathy,
yeah,
and living in empathy, as opposed to acting in fear and judgment, mm, and taboo and alienation and all these like things that separate and parse out, separate and cut up the world.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy the love, warm togetherness better. Yeah. So when I pay attention closer, I can like put my energy in that stuff rather than the,
mm-hmm,
the judging everybody and making work that's out of fear and trying to feel special and better than everybody else.
Yeah. I feel like I always just walk around quoting Ram Dass all day, every day.
That's a good thing to do.
I mean, it's just, he's just been a big part of what has helped me make sense of things. But he says that he describes part of the awakening process, like you get to this space where there is no right or wrong or morality, yet all you want to do is be moral.
Yeah.
And it makes so much sense to me because when we start out, and you explain this in your book, comparing it to music, when you're beginning, you have to have all these rules, mm, and the rights and wrongs and within the structure and the scales. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of messy notes because you don't know, you're not ready yet. And it's the same way, you know, the beginning of a yoga, mm, if you're studying yoga, the beginning of it is virtue, morality. This is what's right. This,
yeah,
is what's,
yeah,
wrong. And, mm-hmm, a lot of spiritual paths are like that. Christianity, yeah, in the essence.
Some,
you know,
of Buddhism as well. The right thinking.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
So it starts within that. And then there becomes a moment where you free yourself of those.
Yeah.
And then I've experienced that in my own journey where then I realize that and I'm like, there's no right and wrong. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
But then that you realize pretty quickly when you let that go, that what you want and what makes you happy is those things, because you see that in the oneness of everything, why would you want to cause pain to your own self or do,
yeah,
something that causes more suffering for your own self? And so then but there's freedom to hold it more loosely, but you,
yeah,
have to kind of go through that process of,
it's almost, I almost think of like the little sticks that you put on trees when they're babies.
Yeah.
Like to get them. Yeah.
There's
to get
the
them
things
to grow in the direction of the sky,
mm-hmm,
and then at a certain point those sticks do not matter and they're,
yeah,
silly,
mm-hmm,
and the tree is growing into the sky, but it can also curve if it wants.
Yeah.
It can also go wherever at some point it's like, try to put a stick on me.
Yeah.
it's silliness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We see it all the truths I found that are really deep, we see it everywhere in the micro all the way to the macro.
Yeah.
We can see that same principle anywhere you look. But there's a metaphor in the book that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
The walking the dog in the rain,
yeah,
metaphor. The first version I read didn't explain it, which I thought was interesting. And so I was kind of sitting with it. And then I realized in the new draft or in the audiobook, at least, that you do explain it afterwards. But I want to talk about kind of hearing more into what that was for you. Cause the first one I heard, cause there's three, right? The three,
yeah,
the first one I was like, it's masturbation.
I was like,
it's like, this is a parable about masturbating. And then the second one, I was like, oh no, it's death. It's definitely death.
Oh, that's funny.
And then by the third one, it clicked for me. And then I loved the twist at the end with that there is no dog.
Yeah.
But so explain a little bit about that metaphor and kind of what you're getting at there.
Yeah. So there's this guy, Fred, and he's got this tremendous aversion to walking dogs in the rain. He thinks it's just the worst thing you can do. He had some kind of experience where that really was drilled into his head, and walking your dog in the rain, how irresponsible. Like your dog's going to smell like a wet dog. You're going to have wet dog smell all over your body. You're going to have wet clothes, you could ruin your tennis shoes. Like, it's not good. But he always finds himself doing it, and he just hates himself because every time it rains, he'll go out and be like, look at the dark clouds, and be like, I hope I don't walk my dog in the rain today. But then he's out there and he walks his dog in the rain. And so the parable, it's in three parts. In the first couple, it's intended to just be painting whatever your problem is, fill in, mm-hmm, the blank, and kind of how just arbitrary it is.
Mm-hmm.
For me, masturbation, what I mean, was as a young evangelical, my crucible. It was, yeah. It was the, God.
And I think the first one comes right after that story, yeah, too, which probably. Is why I would think I was viewing it through that lens. It comes right after
that. She wasn't
that story.
Just.
Just all of a sudden, I'm like, it's masturbation. There's like the masturbation story and then that story. So I thought, oh.
Did you see Jurassic Park? I thought that was a totally story about masturbation. That's just what I thought.
Everything could be everything if could you be. Looked at it through that lens. For
it's
sure.
True. But then by the end, Fred sees that somebody else, he sees this woman walking her dog in the rain and she's fine. And he's like, what? Is it possible that it's okay to walk your dog in the rain? And then upon that realization, he looks down and realizes that he doesn't even have a dog. Mm. That's just been like an entire hallucination the entire time. His own psychosis. And I think that's what we create these problems because we think they're problems. And that does always come back to the self and who you think you are and what you think your problems are. And those are actually one and the same. Mm-hmm. Who you think you are is what you think the problem is with the world. Yeah. Yeah. And that's hard to see until you see it. But when I remove the Michael from the story, I can't really find a problem with the world. Mm-hmm. If I don't assume Michael to be the center of the universe that needs, there's a dog just came into the room. If I don't assume that I'm the photographer trying to arrange the shot, but instead I'm just the camera through which the all is seeing. Mm-hmm. You see, it's a fundamentally different. The camera doesn't judge. The camera doesn't suffer. Mm-hmm. The photographer does. If the camera thought it was a photographer, it was like, oh, I need that to look differently than it does. Mm-hmm. But it has no ability to make the world other than it is. Mm-hmm. So it's just futility. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what the parable is getting at, is the absurdity at the heart of all of our problems.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I like that in the book, you still talk about a lot of kind of magical possibilities. You use all these different examples of, I think at some point you talk about there potentially this whole thing being a galaxy on like the butt of a baboon or something. Mm-hmm. But I like, because I think a lot of times people hear something like this is all there is and think there's no magic about the world or think it, and I like that you still include all of this unknown.
Yeah.
That there still could be all these other things. And that's been something for me personally that I've fought with a lot, because I want there to be all this magic. And I hear all in kind of the woo conscious communities about all these, you know, alien stories and like astral travel and all this, the powers, the cities that you can yeah. have and the things to make this more magical. And it can easily become another that yeah. that's causing you suffering because you're not in this moment. But there is, once I let all that go, then I found that there still can be magic and yeah. in all of this and possibility for all that we don't know. Because I think I thought, and a lot of people feel, that when you obtain this awakening or this enlightenment, that you become the all-knowing one and understand everything. You know, there is no unknown or questions, yeah. which doesn't really seem to be the case. So is there still anything that you bothers you about not knowing things, or that you wonder about, or if somebody comes to you and says, hey, there's, you know that you can, if you close your eyes and snap twice, then you'll be in it, you know, yeah. Do you ever find yourself getting caught in the desire of those types of things, or?
Not so much anymore. I think about like Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. And I imagine it would have been funny if there was a character in Harry Potter that like rationalized all the magic all the time. Like, well, it's not magic, guys. When you say your Patronus charm or whatever, like, this is what happens. It's demonstrable in scientific studies. It's not magic. This is what happens. The wand emits this particle beam and it transfers into the, like, we're talking about there not being magic or not magic, as though two galaxies of stardust that have collected into like meat and blood and bone and brains with electricity can take the air from this ball soaring around this burning giant ball of fusion gas and take that air into its lungs and then expel the air through some vocal cords, creating sounds with the mouths into electronic instruments that somehow go into a computer and turn it into ones and zeros and fly through space into other people's ears. And then they can interpret make
meaning
the,
of yeah. it.
Guys, this is very normal. This is just boring. What can we find that's magical? Yeah. It's like, what? Mm-hmm. So if you were in Harry Potter, what's the most magical situation you can imagine? You've got magic wands and you can fly and you can create deer out of the end of your wand. And now we're talking. Now that would be a magical world. No, you'd be done with that in a week.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what? But what else? This is not enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So coming to say this is all there is not to say what is figure outable.
Mm-hmm. Or even that what we can see yeah. is all there is.
No, but if it is, that's what is.
Yeah.
And if you see it, you could either like love it or not. Mm-hmm. If you experience it, you could either love it for what it is or wish that it was something else and try mm-hmm. to add to it and not be satisfied. Mm-hmm. So if we die and we end up on some baboon's ass
yeah.
for a billion years with crowns of gold, that'll be wild. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of us will get bored with it. Be like, oh, what is this? I wish we had a magic.
Yeah.
Or if we, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm. is always just this. Mm-hmm. And the strange paradox at the heart of it is like, you can't see the magic of it until you stop trying to see the magic.
Mm-hmm.
Or not trying to see the magic. So until you stop trying to see something other than what it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for something else, you're looking for some other oneness.
Yeah.
You're looking for some other magic. Then you miss what's right in front of your face.
Mm-hmm.
And strangely, when you stop looking for something else and look at what is, you can see that it's the most magical thing you could imagine.
Yeah. I love that. That's so important, I think, for all of us to hear. It's mm-hmm. good. That's been a big thing for me to, I've just recently come to understand. I used to have this fixation about aliens. Like, I really wanted to go be an alien on another yeah. planet. And then I realized, we are aliens. Yeah. We are on a planet in yeah. space.
Yes.
We are.
And I know.
It's just, yeah, so there's probably some alien on another planet somewhere wishing that if I just didn't have this antenna,
yeah.
and I had two eyes and, you know,
not 100 eyes,
my
yeah.
butt instead of my mouth, then it would be awesome.
Yeah.
It's just,
that'd
it's
be all, magical.
It's the same thing of yeah. the that for sure. So I'm curious about if for the people that have had some sort of awakening experience or come to understand these things that we're talking about, what have you found is, because obviously the journey doesn't just stop, the mm-hmm. seeking for something other might stop, but there seems to be, I've met a lot of people that would say that they understand this or know who they are. Some of those people are wildly egocentric and suffering mm-hmm. still and mm-hmm. caught up in all of these other ideas and things. Some people are just peace and love. And mm-hmm. why do you think that is different? Do you still read spiritual texts? You still are, is there anything that you're still kind of working on or seeking, or what's kind of the next step
yeah.
for those people?
So for me, my practice is embodiment for the last couple of years. I think that so many of the great traditions have these sages, mystics, heroes who have seen how it is. We see, oh, wow, look at the Buddha, he's enlightened. Look at Christ, he's God. Look at whoever. And then we start climbing the steps to try to get to where they're, we think they want us to go, towards mm-hmm. enlightenment, towards salvation, towards being Christ-like, whatever our stories are. And it's up to the ego to do that. And when you see how it is, though, what about, you see that the ego didn't do anything to inherit it. So what I'm trying to do with this book, and I'm borrowing this metaphor from a guy named Fred Davis, the stairs thing, rather than trying to climb the stairs, seeing who we are, we're our start at the top of the stairs. Mm. Why not just take a look at who we actually are, if we can? And that's what I hope this book can help some people do. Like, who are you under those stories? Let's start there, at the top of the steps. And then when you have that awareness and you can see, oh, I'm not just this separate guy, Michael Gunger. That's a story that people have told about this organism over here that keeps changing, and given like a solid idea to hold, to say that the baby organism is the same as this guy sitting at the table. We need some kind of story to like tie it all together, mm-hmm. even though it's not the same. How could you say that baby is the same thing as this guy sitting here? With a story called Michael Gunger. And so when you see through that story, and you see that if there's an I, it's the I am of all of this that goes together, because there is no Michael Gunger without the air that Michael Gunger is breathing, without this planet, without its trees, without all the other life forms that are all part of the ecosystem, without, you know, without the galaxies that give rise to planets. And so I am the all telling the story of Michael Gunger. And when I see that now, rather than coming at it from a Michael Gunger trying to get out to the all, I can move to embodiment, which is seeing as the all. And I can see that in my mind. I can see through the thought patterns that I used to have. And then now I can move that awareness into my body, into this body. Because that takes time. That is a lifelong mm-hmm. journey of getting, it's like when you see a great musician, you know, when you watch Yo-Yo Ma play cello, he's not doing that with his prefrontal cortex. He's not sitting there like thinking every note, like, mm-hmm. okay, now I got to play this note. Oh shoot, now I got to play this note. D flat, you know, it's like, it's in his body. Mm-hmm. It's down in his fingertips and in his elbows and in his biceps. It's in his muscles. It's mm-hmm. in his bones. And so getting this awareness down into your bones and into your muscles and into your automatic reflexes and how you interact with people, how you respond to stimulus and what you're into and what you're, all that takes time. So the practice of embodiment, of letting awareness move into your muscles and open them up and relax them, be like, it's okay. You're not who you think you are. You're bicep of Michael Gunger. you're actually part of all of this, and you can relax and be okay. Mm. And so I found through the, like, even though my understanding I've been at a pretty clear place in my understanding that I'm the all. That's mm-hmm. That doesn't waver anymore. It's deepening in my body's experience, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. And over time. And so that's not just been something that's been my experience, that's been told to me from others. I'm like, man, you've just seemed different than you used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't get that at first when I saw this. I thought my experience internally was radically different, mm-hmm. but I don't think I was radically different to the world because I hadn't embodied what I saw yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so my work is to get it down into my toe, my third toe,
yeah.
you know, into my belly and mm-hmm. into the chakras. This week I've been breathing into I can't remember the name of it, it starts with an M, but that chakra below the, yeah, beneath the belly button or whatever.
Yeah.
That's been my spot this week of just breathing there
uh-huh.
and letting space and love open there.
Mm.
And I'm not doing that to be enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing that to gain powers.
Yeah.
I'm doing that to love this body because this body is the way that awareness, that the all is experiencing this life, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. That's something I just have kind of recently realized, that a lot of the practices that I've gotten really into or learned about that I thought was to get you to enlightenment, mm-hmm. I had that backwards.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do all these things to get to that understanding, but they can be helpful tools to, for what you're calling embodiment, or there's been other kind of, I think a lot of the different schools of thought or practices that we see that all have different names or ways of explaining it are essentially to do that. Mm-hmm. But then we think that they're to get us to this
other
to
get up
thing.
The stairs. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's actually more helpful.
Climb down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a much easier way to do it, I think, than thinking you have to get to this destination, is to just look back and reflect on that with peace and knowing that it's not, there's not a have to about it or a should or to get you to a certain place. And then there can be this peace about not feeling rushed because you understand who you are. And mm-hmm. then that process can become a lot yeah. less stressful, or like an ego trying to yeah, become something. Is sure. there any particular practice that you've been doing lately to do that?
Before the belly breathing this week, it's been, I've done heart breathing has been my thing for a while. Mm-hmm. Just embodiment exercise. My wound, any Enneagram people out there, I'm an Enneagram 5. And so my typical ways of being in the world, have been about the head and about trying to figure out everything and mm-hmm. turn everything into a construct. So I found that moving into my body with my awareness mm-hmm. and, really having my attention on the sensations in my body opens up all that I was trying to get at when I would try to turn everything into a thought. I was looking for this like transcendent okayness or whatever. But I found funny enough, and I like the paradox of moving into the messiness of flesh and physicality is actually, I find the feelings that I was looking for of like, openness and wonder and okayness, mm-hmm. By moving in.
Mm. That's good. I've been noticing you're referring to yourself as Michael Gunger a lot more. And I introduce you in both of these segments as Michael Gunger, also known as Vishnu
yeah,
Das.
Yeah.
So are you, is the season of Vishnu Das, are you going back to Michael Gunger? What's the situation with that?
I've been talking about Michael Gunger here because that's the primary ego story.
Mm-hmm.
Vishnu Das was a great gift from Ram Dass. He gave me that name in a time that I was, Michael Gunger, I had seen through the illusion of it, but it was still so powerful in my world and in my ears that it was almost triggering because it was my business. It was like mm-hmm. my brand. It had all this association with religious stuff and with belief, and it just had a feeling. It's like when you say, you know, when you say Pepsi,
yeah,
it has a feeling to you of some, it's just a thing yeah. that you kind of know. You're not going to necessarily, unless you love Pepsi, you're going to have like this warm, oh, Pepsi. You already have a feeling about it.
Yeah.
And I already had a feeling about Michael Gunger. So Vishnu Das was this refuge.
Mm-hmm.
A sanctuary for me to remember who I truly am, while some of the Michael Gunger shit was being worked out
yeah.
as and calmed down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love Michael Gunger. I love Vishnu Das.
Mm-hmm.
I don't tell anybody to call me Vishnu Das. If people know the story and they like to call me Vishnu,
yeah,
I love it. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful name. It has beautiful story to it. But I don't need it anymore to be present mm-hmm. to who I really am.
It can be a helpful tool to get you out of that sometimes if it's...
It was a very helpful tool yeah. at a time. It's not, I don't need it as a tool right now,
mm-hmm.
but I love it still.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. And I like to share that if somebody, there's times people just say it casually and don't think about it, but there's also times people are like, Vishnu, and I can tell that they are saying it from presence and mm-hmm. seeing who I am, mm-hmm. not this story, but
yeah.
the I
can represent
the
that.
I am. that's in them as well. And when I hear that, and when we can share it, when I share that with another organism, that's beautiful. Yeah. So I'm not running from either one, but I don't need, for a time, it was a really great gift from Ram Dass and from my community, from mm-hmm. you and our friends here that would call me that and would bring me into like, would just give me like a reprieve from mm-hmm. the Michael Gunger story.
Mm. You feel like being called Vish gave you all the powers of Vishnu upon you? I'm going to start calling myself Lakshmi Das so I can be super rich. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
That's how that works, right?
Yeah.
That I actually heard, it's funny because it, I think there can, I used to laugh at people who'd be like, I had an awakening and now my name is whatever.
Yeah.
But I do see how it can be helpful to, as a tool to break you out of the monotony of the story, but then you have to balance it with not making that a new
yeah.
story. There was this shaman that I know was talking about a ceremony, a guy in a ceremony sitting with him was, the guy was from Rome. He was Italian. And he, in his experience, he realized that he wasn't himself. And he said, he asked the guide in his journey, what is the name of my being? What is its name? And he heard, it's so funny because he heard in Spanish, Fulano del Tal. And he thought, and the music at the moment got all epic. And he was like, yes, I'm Fulano del Tal. It's the name of my being. And he went to the shaman who speaks Spanish and said, I'm so grateful I got the name of my being. And the shaman started laughing because in Spanish, Fulano del Tal means nobody, basically. It's like Joe Schmo or
yeah.
whoever. And the guy thought it was like, Fulano del Tal is my
beautiful.
Name. And then he found out later that it was nothing. Interesting how and why he heard that in Spanish.
That's amazing.
Oh, I thought that was a funny story because we experience this of our true selves and then we want to name that and make it another story, but it's, yeah.
Wow, so he didn't speak Spanish?
No, and so he didn't, he just thought it was a name, but then the shaman told him
that's a legit name.
Yeah. It's like Joe Schmo or.
Yeah, that's perfect.
In English, Fulano de Tal.
Perfect.
Like,
wow.
So I thought that was a funny story. Okay, well, last question before we wrap it up. I want to see if I told you right now that the whole world was listening to you, your own self. Essentially, it is, if you think about it. But for the sake of the analogy, we'll imagine the separate world, all these listeners. Everybody was looking at you, and you could tell them one thing. What would you tell them?
You're beautiful.
That's good.
Just as you are. Perfect.
That's good. We all need to hear that. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was so fun to talk. I feel like we could talk about this for days, but people probably wouldn't want to listen to it for days. I would.
Thanks for having me, Emily.
But yeah, this was great. So yeah, check out Michael's book. This, I would personally recommend the audiobook version. It's got some music and just hearing him tell the story, there's something really beautiful about that. But the actual copy of the book is also a really gorgeous cover. And yeah, either one is great. So check that out. It's out now on all things.
All
Amazon,
things.
All things.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you did, you might also want to check out the Plato Explanations video that I did with Michael on YouTube, where he explains suffering via Plato. Have a beautiful day, and remember that you are safe, you are loved, and you have everything you need within you.